Support for GLT's Grow comes from Chris Holderly at Advantage Lawn and Landscape, offering customized services for commercial and residential landscaping and property design, including staging for long-term growth during all seasons. Proud to serve Central Illinois. Details at growingadvantage.com. This is 89.1 GLT and WGLT.org.
Solving gardening problems is one of the things we really like to do on Grow, and this time it's two problems in one edition of Grow. Patrick Murphy is from Illinois State University's School of Biological Sciences and curator of the Fell Arboretum, and I'm GLT's Mike McCurdy. Grow is your source for practical gardening advice, and I hope we can dispense some of that today as it concerns a tree that has a problem and a homeowner facing a problem trying to choose the right tree. Murph, how are you?
I'm well, Mike. How are you?
Good. Let's start with Grant Rucker in Normal, who sounds like he's trying to do all of the right things.
We're in a fairly new part of a subdivision in North Normal, and so we've continued to plant trees over the years to try to, you know, fill it out. And so this was a bald and burlap tree that we put in, had installed last December, right before it got cold.
He sent pictures, which you'll be able to see when this podcast is posted, and this tree does not look good. What kind of tree is it, and what's going on with this thing?
The tree that is in the picture is a type of thornless honey locust. It's a native honey locust.
Native to Illinois.
Native to
Central Illinois.
To North America and Central Illinois. And it is a tree that is... It has been overplanted in a lot of regards. When the tree became popular in the late 70s and early 80s, landscape architects plugged them into plans all over the United States. It's a great tree to have in the landscape because it coexists with lawns very well. Last to leaf out and first to lose its leaves, so it's a bit of a lazy employee in the landscape.
So there are dead branches, and it's weeping sap, a lot of sap. So what's happening here?
This tree has canker, and along with some other problems.
So what is canker?
Canker is a bacterial disease, and in a lot of trees, it causes a blister, and there'll be some kind of growth under the bark, and when that blister grows, it'll cause the bark to break open, and then the sap oozes out, or it pokes out through little tiny holes, and you can see both of those in the photographs.
Do you suspect that's what's killing the branches as well?
Yeah, the tree's kind of dying a death of a thousand cuts. It has some other issues that were probably brought on by the tree's location and the disease that's there. So locust trees would probably not be growing out in the middle of a hot, sunny prairie. They would probably be growing on the rim of the forest, where they have some protection from the wind and the sun, from other trees, and from their own kind.
So Grant just wants to know what to do.
We're concerned if the damage has been done, you know, internally to the tree, even if we can save it, if we can salvage it by trying to treat it somehow and continuing to take care of it, is it already damaged? You know, is this tree in 5-10 years, as it gets larger, is it going to become a risk to, you know, the neighborhood? It's out by the street, so is it going to crack? Are branches going to fall? Things like that.
So when it was planted, a root stimulator was used. It's been fertilized and fed and watered. Can it be saved?
It could be, but it could take one's lifetime for it to recover and to become a fully functioning tree. And this tree appears to be in the front of the home. So all the while you're waiting for this tree to come back, it's kind of the marquee out in front of the house. I think it's unlikely that it would come back, even if someone had a full-time dedicated service stop to come by and check on this tree every month or so. Some of the canker blisters look like about the size of a hand, and the trunk on the tree looks like it's, say, 4 to 5 inches max. So what happens is the area under the bark, the xylem and the phloem, where all the transpiration of nutrients and waters being pumped through the tree, that part of the tree is going to be damaged there. So we have trees like that on campus where the canker has caused a large piece of bark to fall away. So now it's kind of like half the lanes in the highway are shut down, and that's what leads to the dieback of the branches up above.
So generally, you said this tree has been overplanted. Sometimes they're not planted in the right place. They like to be with other trees more often. Is this tree generally a good choice or not?
It is, but it's the place that it's planted that's important. So this tree would probably do better in an area that it was in the shade from other trees or from a home for a while. Plus, it likes moist but well-drained soil. So North Normal new construction tells me that it's probably a clay-based soil. drainage is not superior there. There are trees that are better suited for that and less likely to give you trouble.
So maybe for Grant, he might want to move on.
I suggested that he try a different tree because the spot that this tree in seems to be kind of a central part of the landscape. It lines up with the front door, so it's important that it's a nice tree.
So David Anderson of Bloomington isn't concerned about an existing tree. It's about a future tree. He wants to replace an ornamental pear. And before we get into what he's looking for, let's talk about pear trees because they have issues.
They do have issues, but let's just say they are glorious, okay? If you've ever been to the
Beautiful
Kentucky Derby.
When they flower.
Yeah, if you go to the Kentucky Derby at that time of year, boy, Churchill Downs is just skirted with them. They're a fabulous tree if they're away from property. So a agricultural lane, the outer courtyard to the Kentucky Derby where the only thing that's there are well-dressed people and fences, there's not much else there. In that case, it's a great spot for the pear tree, but they're a corky, fast-growing tree that are prone to break right where the branches kind of flare out from the trunk.
David has lost a quarter of this tree four times, so eventually there was nothing left of the tree. He's been thinking hard about a serviceberry tree, but he's not completely settled.
We think that any tree that has these properties will be accepted by the Homeowners Association, and that would be 30 to 40 feet high, 15 to 20 feet wide, with, again, enough of a canopy or whatever you call it, and with leaves that are large enough and enough leaves that it really does block the sun and it gives us privacy.
They want to block the sun near a window with this tree, but they also can't have a tree that blocks the view to the lake because of the Homeowners Association rules. Is that
right?
Common to run into those kinds of rules in some areas?
It is. Homeowners associations commonly create covenants for the landscape in the residential areas. That is very common.
Go ahead.
30 to 40 feet high is kind of on the shorter side for shade trees. But the good news is there are lots of ornamental trees that reach this size that have a bloom, and they're reliable. So if you like serviceberry, a multi-stemmed kind of bushy-looking tree, you might also want to consider the redbud, the eastern redbud. Fantastic umbrella-shaped tree. And in one's lifetime, it'll maybe reach 40 feet. Yellowwood is another smaller-sized shade tree that in one's lifetime, it could reach 30 to 40 feet. You could do the homework on that tree, and depending on where it grows, they can grow taller than that. And I think that the best of intentions are what are in mind when homeowners associations create these covenants. But 30 to 40 feet high in one's lifetime is more along the lines of an ornamental or small shade tree.
And bonus points, if like a serviceberry, it would attract birds. Any ideas? I mean, flowering crabapple might attract birds.
It might, but it wouldn't be my first choice. Flowering crabapples in a newly developed subdivision have some of the same problems that the locust we just talked about because of the poorly drained soils. Leaf spot, apple scab, fire blight, those are all issues with most crabapples. I would lean towards something on the native side. The serviceberry fits that bill. I mentioned the redbud also.
Or you could just hang a feeder in the tree.
Hang a feeder in the tree. But both native trees are a host to many pollinators and many beneficials, and the serviceberry is an excellent choice.
If you have questions about trees or any problems in your yard, submit them at wglt.org/grow. Next week, Murph, we'll talk about native trees and squirrels. And I want to know which camp you're in. Love them or hate them when it comes to squirrels, because I don't think there's any in-between ground.
I love the critters. I love all of them, so I'm kind of soft on that.
All right, so that's Patrick Murphy. I'm Mike McCurdy. I'm with you on squirrels. Send your gardening questions to wglt.org/grow.